My name is Susan Webb, and I've been in the industry my whole adult life, it seems. Over 40 years now, I can't believe it, but started really young.
Welcome to Voices of Travel, The Next Chapters, an interview series that captures the passion, humor, and character of 15 remarkable people as they tell us the stories of their careers in the industry. Thanks for joining us, Sue. I'm hoping you can tell us about your first job in the industry.
Well, you know, I didn't think I was going to be in travel. I went to Europe thinking I was going to be a lawyer. I wanted to be Perry Mason. And I got to Europe and went, there has to be a way I can travel and make money. So I came back to Canada and I enrolled in Sheridan College, their tourism and travel program. And it was beginning of my career in the travel industry. So yeah, it's been great.
What was your first job after you finished school? Can you tell us about it?
I was really blessed to go on a placement from Sheridan into Lawson McKay Travel, owned by Ken Lawson, the famous P. Lawson family. And it was a great experience because I learned how to be a travel agent. We did a lot of corporate travel, executives, all their travel. And then they had a really unique groups division, which was really interesting to learn all about groups, sending doctors away and all of that around the world. And then I got to take over the flights to Copenhagen. In those days, you had to be part of a group, Affinity Charters. So we had, if you were a part of the Danish Canadian Club, you were part of a group. So I would do all of the manifests for the charters that went from Canada to Copenhagen. And it was so long ago that I had to use a telex machine to type out the manifests. And I'm sure people that are watching don't even know what a telex machine is.
All right, Sue, paint me a picture to help people understand what the industry was like back then, because it was very different.
The industry when I started was very different than it was what it is today. Some of it good, some of it perhaps not so good. But I think the main thing when I look back at the industry was how fun it was. We were all young, very young. Everybody was dedicated. They wanted to have fun as well as work hard. It was all about your clients. Like in those days, we had no social media. We had like nothing to communicate and except sales calls. So once I got into the tour operator business, which is what I loved, and I went and joined Skylark Holidays, our sales team met with travel agents across the country. That was the way you communicated. You went and did sales calls, which has changed a lot now with webinars and all of the different ways we communicate. But it was all about creating relationships with our travel agents, which I think was why the success of some of the companies I was blessed to be part of was because we really, our relationships were what made us different than our competition. But we had so much fun. We played hard as well as worked hard. So, in fact, I remember going to an ACTA conference in Winnipeg and my sales team that was with me, we drank the hotel, the Winnipeg Inn, out of Mouton Cadet. So it was those kind of days. We can't do that anymore.
Who was your mentor? Who was the person who had the biggest influence on your career? And how did they influence it?
I've had a lot of mentors, but I think the first mentor that really changed the way I looked at my job and in the industry was Julian Prince. He was our VP marketing at Skylark, and he hired me, and I was very young, and he just really gave me a really good base of what sales and marketing was all about, customer experiences, being a good team member and a good boss, because I'd never been a boss before, and I had these young salespeople the same age as me, and all of a sudden Friday night we were friends and Monday morning I was their boss. So Julian was a master at the tourism industry. And then after Skylark was bought by Caltrav, which was Sunflight Holidays, and it all went out of business, it was a terrible day, 1982, April 30th, Julian just said, come on, Sue, we've got another company starting tomorrow. Go pick the people we need, and we're going to start Esprit Vacations and look after as many people as we can. So he was a real entrepreneur and a marketer that gave me a lot of direction. And yeah, he was awesome.
What about the tour operator business? Has it changed?
Yes, I think so. I mean, when the tour operator business has changed, it was then smaller companies that had a relationship with like one airline, like Skylark and Ward Air. That was, we were their tour operator and Ward Air was the airline. And now it's sort of the airlines have their own tour operators. It's kind of changed a bit. But we were mainly focused on, of course, the Caribbean and Mexico, where Canadians at that time wanted to travel on vacations, and then expanded into Europe. So, yes, I think there was no direct sell. If you were in reservations, especially at Skylark, we had the reservations desks, and basically travel agents would phone in and they would take a book out of the middle of the desk for that departure date in that hotel, and they would write the customer's name and the travel agent in pencil in case they canceled. And then there was a wait list. In those days, there was a wait list always on all the flights. I guess we didn't have enough capacity for then. And then the sales reps, if they were smart, if they had one of their travel agents that had a waitlisted couple, they would go in with chocolates to the res agents and hopefully get them to, you know, put their waitlisted travel agent passenger up into the top to get them confirmed. So you had to be really nice to your reservations people in those days. Not like now they're working from home, we don't even get to meet them, but it was very important for the sales team to be really in tune with reservations and the other departments, accounting for refunds. And it was very special days.
You were at Canada 3000, Sue.
Oh, that was, so after Skylark and then Esprit Vacations, I was really thrilled to go to Adventure Tours, which Adventure Tours, again, two other mentors, Paul Jervis and Colin Hunter, masters in running a tour operator, very entrepreneurial. And Adventure Tours then became part of ITH, International Travel Holdings. We had Solvac in Montreal, Fiesta West, PS Holidays in Winnipeg, and Adventure Tours. So we became a national tour operator of these independently owned companies. So that was a really interesting process. And then they sold out to the Brits, as a lot of the Canadian tour operators, really the background was from England, from a long time when it started in the travel industry in Canada. So that was an interesting, going from an entrepreneurial led group of tour operators with Colin and Paul to a more corporate, big corporation running a company. And unfortunately for me, it was just, I had to leave. It was just a very different way of managing that I felt more comfortable in a sort of entrepreneurial startup mode. So, which is then what happened with Canada 3000. We started the tour operator for them because Signature at the time decided to go with Royal Airlines instead of Canada 3000. So all of a sudden you've got this amazing airline, Canada 3000 was, with nobody to fly them because they didn't do direct business. So we very quickly went to all of our staff that needed a position and a job from Sunflight Holidays and started Canada 3000 Vacations. And it was the best company. It was, we worked so hard. We were so respected in the industry. We treated our agents so special. We had the best product launches. I used to make all my sales team dress up. They'll remember this. If we were promoting England, they would be dressed as Henry VIII or somebody from Holland, or if it was the Caribbean, we'd have them in traditional costumes, and they're like, oh no, now what is she going to make us wear? But no one forgot our team, and that's what we tried to do. So Canada 3000 was very special. The integration between the airline and the tour operator was very successful until 9/11. And then that another date that changed the whole industry. And unfortunately, Canada 3000 didn't make it in Canada, which was very tragic. So again, in startup mode, we had all of these amazing, talented people that worked for Canada 3000 that were now basically out of a job. So Colin Hunter at that time had bought Red Seal Tours. So he came to our executive team and said, I really want to make Red Seal into a real tour operator instead of FIT. Can you help? And we had 7 weeks to hire, buy product, put out brochures, put a marketing plan together, put res in place to make it happen so that we could launch it in September. So that was an incredible experience.
What did the company launch as?
It launched as Sunwing. Yeah, we did the logos and worked with their creative team on everything. And it was, was quite a great experience.
That doesn't happen today, does it?
No, it's different. It's different now with much more large corporations involved in the industry, but still some very successful. And of course, Sunwing is still very, very strong in what they're doing.
So, Sue, how did you end up starting Vox International?
9/11 was the reason that Vox started. I did have the opportunity to go and work with another couple of tour operators after Canada 3000 went bankrupt. But I just was in, that was our competitors. And it was very difficult for me to think about working for the competitors. And at that time, we had some of the hoteliers from the Caribbean and Mexico that relied so much on Canada 3000 for selling their hotel rooms. They came and asked myself and at that time my two partners, Lawrence and Mike, if we could help them in Canada. So over a dining room table, we kind of put a plan together and what we could maybe do. And so it started out being called Slam Inc., but that name didn't resonate very well with some people marketing-wise. So it changed to Vox, which is Voice of Experience. So we were the voice of our clients and we had experience in the market. And that was May of 2002, so 21 years ago now.
I'm wondering if I could ask you about diversity, equity, and inclusiveness. From the time you began in the industry, what have you seen in that area? Have the opportunities for women improved?
The travel industry has, I think, done a fairly good job over the last few years and being more inclusive and more diversified, particularly for women. There's a lot more women in executive positions and running their own businesses than there were when I started. And I think that's great. And also LGBTQ, there's so many more opportunities for inclusion, marketing. Like we at Vox, not one of our clients do not have a diverse marketing campaign plan because we know there's different Canadian demographics that we have to. So I think that is now becoming much more part of how we sell travel and we promote travel in Canada, very diversified, whether it's people with accessibility issues is now becoming much more important with the way that we look at selling destinations and hotels to, as I said, LGBTQ, whether it's women, whether it's men, whether it's, and we have a very diverse company at Vox. I have, I think, 10 languages. We've got single women, we've got married women, we've got married men, we've got we have it covered. And I think that's what's so wonderful about our industry is that we're so welcoming to everyone.
You talked about 9/11, but there have been a lot of external events. Y2K, SARS, wars, economic downturns, and of course, COVID. Can you talk about how external events have impacted the industry and how the industry has responded?
One of the most, I guess, interesting things about this industry is that it's different every day. You never know what's going to happen. And as we talked about the things, the challenges over the years, we talked about 9/11, we talk about floods and fires and Y2K, where we were all not going to be here January 1st, and the computers wouldn't work, and all of these different challenges. It has taught us all to be so resilient, I think, as an industry, and particularly the last 2.5 years with COVID and how that affected our industry so seriously. But we're still here, and we're back almost to where we were pre-pandemic levels, which means the industry's done a good job of keeping the message out there that life really needs travel and tourism, and the executives and the passionate people that are in the industry are making that continue. But it also teaches you, you need an amazing crisis plan all the time. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I think everyone in our business knows how to write a communications crisis plan now that we didn't even hear about 20 years ago. But now we are very much about how do we talk to the media? How do we talk to the consumer? And very much how do we talk to the travel trade? How do we get them the right messaging to make their clients, who is the ultimate traveler, feel comfortable that where they're going or any of these things that are happening around the world, how it affects them. So we're good communicators now. Well, we're hoping we are all we should be. But it's an interesting business. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Sustainability. This past summer of heat domes, forest fires, natural disasters has driven home the fact that climate change is happening. How do you see the industry addressing this issue? Can you talk a bit about sustainability?
I believe the most important thing that we as an industry right now have to take seriously is climate change and sustainability in tourism. We're trying to do better, but we're not there. And I think it's the more we talk about it, the more important it will become. This isn't a choice anymore, as we see in the news, what's happening around the world, floods and fires, and even right in our own backyard in Canada. Like, we've never seen anything like this. We have to be better at what we're doing. I'm on a really interesting global sustainable tourism panel with SCAL, which is an association of tourism professionals around the world. And we have members on our committee from Taiwan and India and Australia and Norway, Europe and the Americas, of course, and the US and Canada, and talking about how different parts of the world are addressing sustainability is really interesting. And we're putting a whole kit together for all of our members of how to be more sustainable, how to put sustainable events and meetings on, of things that we should be doing in our industry. And we all have to take this seriously. In Europe, it's now mandated that the companies have to have a sustainability program in place. It's against the law. We're not there yet in North America, and we have to get there. My company, Vox, went through a Travel Life Accreditation Program, which is a company out of Europe that certifies travel companies that are sustainable. And wow, it took us almost 2 years because it's not easy to get rid of paper and to do things the way that we need to, but it's been such a great experience learning things about water wastage and the climate change and things that happen that we are all now in our own lives, not just in our industry, in our own lives being smarter. And that's what I think as an industry, we have an opportunity to really help the consumer, the traveler, be more aware. There's programs now, airlines and hotels, like offsetting your travel. We don't want people not to fly and not to travel. That wouldn't be good at all. But there's ways to help offset what you're doing. Plant a tree when you get to a destination, or do some give back. Like in Hawaii, we have Malama Hawaii, where you can help with the ocean or the reefs or the beaches. And lots of countries now are doing these types of programs that visitors can feel they're giving back when they travel. And I think we have to promote that more as when you go. The younger generation are into this. They get it. When they go to a destination, how can we help? Can we, you know, meet the local children? Can we help with the animals? Or is there something we can do to give back while we're there? So I think that's really important that we as an industry promote more of that. We have to do more webinars, more explaining how it's the programs that are out there that people could get involved with, whether they're a travel agent or a tour operator, a hotel or an airline. There are resources coming. Even in the colleges and the universities that are teaching tourism and hospitality programs now, they're putting this in as a course, sustainability and tourism, which I think is awesome because the leaders of tomorrow and today have got to put this as a major priority for how we're going to sustain our planet. It's really critical. So we have to be leaders.
Consumers certainly want to travel responsibly, but I'm wondering if travel agents are having that conversation with their customers. And perhaps more importantly, are agents starting that conversation with their clients?
I think the travel agents now have to be a little braver and start a conversation about when their travelers are booking their vacation, about options they have of how they can help. There are a lot of programs out there. And I think particularly travel agents over the last few years have been pretty beaten up. They're worried about asking for more money. It's like, well, you can offset your flight by this much more money, or you can plant trees or help out for more money. And I think they have to get over that. There's been research out recently that Canadian travelers want to be sustainable, and they will pay for that. They will pay to stay in a hotel that is more sustainable or has good practices. They're now looking at that when they're booking. So if they might have to pay a little bit more because the hotel in Costa Rica has a totally sustainable platform, but it's a little more expensive, they will do that. And I think that the conversation has to start with the travel agents. And hopefully they're having more phone conversations instead of just email conversations with their clients. Because once you start the discussion about sustainability, I've never had anyone say, oh, that's a silly idea. Who would ever want to do that? Everyone goes, of course, how can I help? But they're not sure how. There's a lot of information we still need to get out through the media. And webinars and those types of things, these programs that are available. And they can be done and they're not expensive, and we have to do it for our next generations.
Technology has always been part of the travel and tourism industry. Has it had a beneficial impact? Can you give some examples of its benefits? What about examples of some negative effects?
Technology in the industry has changed so much. When I started, we didn't have any of the wonderful technology that's there today. As I said, you picked up the phone and called reservations at Air Canada or a tour operator or a hotel, and you made the booking, and you might get a fax confirmation, but definitely no emails and those types of things. So it's now so easy, but then overwhelming. I'm sure that I'm not alone, that you're having hundreds of emails a day and going through them of what's important, what's not, and how to action them. People are expecting immediate response now, where in the old days, it's like, oh, well, get your tickets. They're going to mail them to us from the tour operator, and we'll send them to you, or you could come in about a week or 10 days. Now it's an automatic. They want it yesterday. So technology, has it made us more efficient? In some ways, I think very much so, because we're now totally able to work remotely, which we could never have done even 10 years ago with how we're able to work from home or around the world. But I think that one of the things we've lost is the personal touch. We don't talk on the phone to people anymore. We send them emails, we send them texts. And I think the personal service needs to be a little bit fine-tuned.
How do you see artificial intelligence shaping the future of the travel industry going forward? It's early days, but how do you see the role of agents in an AI world? Will they survive? Why?
Now the AI and ChatGPT, it's like, wow. I did try. I downloaded ChatGPT on my phone and I asked it very quickly to write me a press release about wildfires and how it was affecting a destination. Within a second, I had a full press release with all of the right formatting. Information was amazing. I'm like, wow, that's like incredible. Now, it's not going to be replacing us because we have to fact check everything that comes out. But at the same time, it could help with, you know, writing job descriptions or writing things that could help us do a better job. I'm not sure. Itineraries. I know there's been discussion on helping travel agents make custom itineraries for their clients instead of hours and hours of research. It could help them guide them. So I think as much as it's a little scary because it's new and it's come so fast, I believe that it's going to be a good thing for our industry as long as we manage it properly and make sure we fact check everything. But it's interesting. But I still miss my BlackBerry. I must say I was a BlackBerry fan and I still miss it. But my iPhone's good too.
Do you have any advice for someone who's thinking about a career in travel? What would it be?
Anybody that wants to get into the industry, I say come in now. I mean, the opportunity to be able to travel around the world, meet new people, new cultures, new experiences, different foods. It just makes you a better person. The salaries are becoming more respectable than perhaps in the beginning when people got into the travel industry. It was for the free trips, which don't really, I think, happen anymore. But now it's a career. And there's great programs, particularly in Canada, with the colleges and universities across Canada, with tourism and hospitality programs that are excellent. And they're not just 1 year, they're 2-4 years. So you're actually getting an incredible degree to get into management in the industry. So there's so many opportunities. Anyone wanting to get in, come and talk to me. Or I know a lot of my colleagues that have been in the business a long time would give the same advice. Once you get in, it's very hard to get out because it's such an incredible industry.
Last question. In the next decade, what do you see as the industry's greatest challenge? What does it have to do to meet that challenge? And in the next decade, what do you see as the industry's greatest opportunity?
Wow, a crystal ball about what the travel industry will look like in 10 years. I think I'll still be in it. Because I do love it. But I think there'll be more amalgamation between companies as we're seeing now, particularly with the travel industry community, the host agencies, because it's let the travel agents do what they do best and sell and promote and have a good host agency that can help them with a marketing administration. So I think we'll see more of that happening. And we can see definitely more international companies getting involved in the Canadian market, buying up some of our companies here to make them more global in their respect. But I still think it's going to be a great industry to be involved with. Technology will definitely continue to evolve. I don't know where it could go next, but if you can go to the moon now, who knows where you can go in 10 years.
So Sue, is there something that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
There's so many memories of this industry I've had so far. Lots of things I can't talk about because there have been some pretty interesting things over the years. And I'm sure a lot of you know, like, what happens on a fam trip stays on a fam trip.
Thanks for telling us your story, Sue. And thanks to all of you for joining me for this episode. I'm Bob Mowat, Executive Editor of Canadian Travel Press. And I hope you'll join me for another remarkable conversation on Voices of Travel, the next chapters.